She felt a rhythm without sound or movement, a sense of beating tension, as if the wheels of the John Galt line were still speeding on. Slowly, in answer, and in resistance to an unspoken summons, she turned and looked at him. The look she saw on his face made her know for the first time that she had known this would be the end of the journey. That look was not as men are taught to represent it. It was not a matter of loose muscles, hanging lips, and mindless hunger. The lines of his face were pulled tight, giving it a peculiar purity, a sharp precision of form, making it clean and young. His mouth was taut, the lips faintly drawn inward, stressing the outline of its shape. Only his eyes were blurred, their lower lids swollen and raised, their glance intent with that which resembled hatred and pain. The shock became numbness spreading through her body. She felt a tight pressure in her throat and in her stomach. She was conscious of nothing but a silent convulsion that made her unable to breathe. But what she felt, without words for it, was, "Yes, Hank, yes, now, because it is part of the same battle in some way that I can't name, because it is our being against theirs, our great capacity for which they torture us, the capacity of happiness. Now, like this, without words or questions, because we want it." It was like an act of hatred, like the cutting blow of a lash encircling her body. She felt his arms around her. She felt her legs pulled forward against him and her chest bent back under the pressure of his mouth on hers. Her hand moved from his shoulders to his waist, to his legs, releasing the unconfessed desire of her every meeting with him. When she tore her mouth away from him, she was laughing soundlessly in triumph, as if saying, "Hank Reardon, the austere, unapproachable Hank Reardon of the monk-like office, the business conferences, the harsh bargains. Do you remember them now? I'm thinking of it, for the pleasure of knowing that I've brought you to this." He was not smiling. His face was tight. It was the face of an enemy. He jerked her head and caught her mouth again, as if he were inflicting a wound. She felt him trembling, and she thought that this was the kind of cry she had wanted to tear from him, this surrender through the shreds of his tortured resistance. Yet she knew at the same time that the triumph was his, that her laughter was her tribute to him, that her defiance was submission, that the purpose of all of her violent strength was only to make his victory the greater. He was holding her body against his, as if stressing his wish to let her know that she was now only a tool for the satisfaction of his desire. And his victory, she knew, was her wish to let him reduce her to that. "Whatever I am," she thought, "whatever pride of person I may hold, the pride of my courage, of my work, of my mind, and my freedom, that is what I offer you for the pleasure of your body. That is what I want you to use in your service. And that you want it to serve you is the greatest reward I can have." There were lights burning in the two rooms behind them. He took her wrist and threw her inside his room, making the gesture tell her that he needed no sign of consent or resistance. He locked the door, watching her face. Standing straight, holding his glance, she extended her arm to the lamp on the table and turned out the light. He approached. He turned the light on again with a single contemptuous jerk of his wrist. She saw him smile for the first time. A slow, mocking, sensual smile that stressed the purpose of his action. He was holding her half stretched across the bed. He was tearing her clothes off, while her face was pressed against him, her mouth moving down the line of his neck, down his shoulder. She knew that every gesture of her desire for him struck him like a blow, that there was some shudder of incredulous anger within him, yet that no gesture would satisfy his greed for every evidence of her desire. He stood looking down at her naked body. He leaned over. She heard his voice. It was more a statement of contemptuous triumph than a question. "You want it?" Her answer was more a gasp than a word. Her eyes closed, her mouth open. "Yes." She knew that what she felt with the skin of her arms was the cloth of his shirt. She knew that the lips she felt on her mouth were his. But in the rest of her there was no distinction between his being and her own, as there was no division between body and spirit. Through all the steps of the years behind them, the steps down a course chosen in the courage of a single loyalty, their love of existence, chosen in the knowledge that nothing will be given, that one must make one's own desire and every shape of its fulfillment. Through the steps of shaping metal, rails, and motors, they had moved by the power of the thought that one remakes the earth for one's enjoyment, that man's spirit gives meaning to insentient matter by molding it to serve one's chosen goal. The course led them to the moment when, in answer to the highest of one's values, in an admiration not to be expressed by any other form of tribute, one's spirit makes one's body become the tribute, recasting it as proof, as sanction, as reward into a single sensation of such intensity of joy that no other sanction of one's existence is necessary. He heard the moan of her breath. She felt the shudder of his body in the same instant.